You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast. It is Wednesday, June 9th, 2021. I'm your host, John B. from gangrenenation.com. And today our episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. We are back today after a little bit of a summer hiatus to accommodate my travel schedule. Thank you for bearing with me. Now, we are not going to be back to daily episodes until the beginning of training camp a little bit later in the summer, but we're going to try and do a couple shows a week. We're not going to have many weeks where there will be no episodes, aside from maybe the week of 4th of July, because I typically try and take that week off. Anyway, on today's show, we are going to do a mailbag because it is Wednesday, and on Wednesdays, typically our shows are mailbags. Thanks to everybody who sent in questions. Our first question: for decades, it seems like we have always been stuck with a head coach who would always sign or play a veteran, opposed to developing and coaching young talent. I've always felt like the veteran would steal opportunity from the younger players who needed to gain experience. So does Salah. Salah feels to sign a veteran quarterback, cornerback would eat up reps from younger guys. Since we are in year one in a competitive rebuild with this coach GM pairing, do you agree with this strategy? Well, I don't think that there are any universal answers to the whole veteran versus young player question. Now, I think if you have a young guy who can play, you want to get him on the field. But I think sometimes this is overstated. I mean, Adam Gase did not have any problems getting Mekhi Becton on the field. He did not have any problems giving playing time to Denzel Mims when he was healthy last year. Now, there were some issues with throwing the ball to your backup slot receiver over Denzel Mims in some games, but that was a game planning issue. Even guys like Ashton Davis got playing time last year. And, you know, people said the same thing about Todd Bowles, how Todd Bowles did not like to play young talent, but you look at Bowles' track record. I mean, Jamal Adams and Marcus May were regular starters in their first years in the NFL. Leonard Williams got playing time. So I think that sometimes this is overstated. I think in general, you want rookies to earn their playing time. I'm not a big fan of just giving rookies playing time because they're young. I think if all things are equal, you would prefer a young player to step up. And if it's like a tie, then maybe the tie goes to youth to getting players that experience. But to be honest with you, through the years, I've heard a lot of complaints that the Jets are not playing young players, and most of the time there's been a reason for that, and it's because these young players have never amounted to anything. These guys, it did not matter how much experience they got, they would never be quality young players. Now, I think you can make an exception in like the end of a lost season. You might just want to give a young player some reps to hope maybe they can use it to build momentum heading into the offseason, but I think in general, on principle, you want to have a meritocracy. You don't want young players to step in and be handed playing time just because they're young players. I think you want guys to have to show you. They need to show up. They need to work hard. They need to display talent. You want to inspire guys. You don't want to just hand out jobs. I've gotten to the point, and I've gone back and forth on this through the years, but I've kind of settled on my current position, which is you don't want to just hand guys jobs. You want to force them to earn them, especially when they're young. You know, you don't want them to feel comfortable that they're going to have a starting job. Now, if you look at the corner position, I think the Jets need to sign somebody. You know, this is Salah talking right now. Salah's commenting, we don't need a veteran guy. And you always hear teams say this. You know, it was not so much a veteran versus rookie scenario a couple of years ago, but remember when Jonathan Harrison, all these stories, the Jets organization was talking about how confident they were in Jonathan Harrison starting at center, and then they went out and signed Ryan Khalil, which, you know, may not have been the right move in hindsight, but it shows you that you cannot always believe what you hear this time of year. You know, I look at this Jets secondary at corner in particular, and I mean, you could maybe talk me into Bryce Hall locking down a starting role, but who's starting across from him? You know, I think you got to, it's not so much that you need a veteran, it's just you need somebody who can play, because the Jets are going to try and win games this year. The Jets may not be a team favorite to make the playoffs, but if a couple things go right, you know, if things bounce your way, you want to be in position to take advantage of it. You know, you don't want to be in a position where you get good injury luck, the schedule ends up not being that difficult, some lucky bounces late in games, and then suddenly you miss the playoffs because you don't have a good enough corner group. So I think that they should sign a veteran. It's not so much veteran versus rookie. It's that are the young guys good enough? And my guess is probably not. Next question. There's so much talk about drafting college safeties and switching them to linebacker, or signing or drafting an offensive tackle and kicking them to guard, moving a left tackle to right tackle. Is it really that simple? I was surprised to learn that Penei Sewell admitted the switch is difficult. Well, it's not simple. It's not simple to change a player's position, but some players have certain skill sets, and some players are not always used in a position that optimizes their skill set in college. There are lots of college coaches who will just stick their best athlete at tackle, left tackle. There are some players who may have the skill set to succeed at left tackle in college, but they just are not athletic enough to handle left tackle in the NFL, so they have to move to either guard or right tackle. There are certain corners who maybe have skills that are good enough. You can match up with college receivers at corner, but maybe you're not good enough to match up with NFL receivers. However, you're a good enough tackler and you handle the deep zone well enough to succeed at safety. It's all about your skill sets, and it's also about the system that you're put into. You know, a guy who might be a good corner in a zone system, his best fit in a man system might be free safety, where he's playing deep, where he's still playing a deep zone while everybody else is playing man-to-man. So it really depends on skill set, I think. In each system, you have certain skills that you want for each role. And even if your past is playing a different position, you may fit in better elsewhere. You know, an analogy that I would use is that you may have somebody who's not great with numbers in your company, and they've worked in accounting the whole time, but they're very, you know, they got a great personality. Even though they've never worked customer service before, you might see that they're struggling in accounting because they're not great with numbers. So you move them to customer service. It's kind of the same principle there, where you're looking for guys who fit, who have the skills that you're looking for in a given role. No, it's not easy. You know, if you're moving from left tackle to right tackle, you're essentially creating a mirror of what you usually do. You have to do everything the opposite. You know, you're just thinking about, like, you're essentially flipping yourself around. Things you used to do left-handed, you're doing right-handed. And there are different angles when you move from corner to safety. It's not so much that it's an easy transition. It's where you'll fit better long-term based on what you're able to do and what you're not able to do. And again, And another thing that I'd bring up is that sometimes position labels are not the same. I mean, I kept hearing about how Darren Lee was an outside linebacker in college and the Jets were stupid to move him to inside linebacker. Well, you know, the outside linebacker role Lee played in college was probably more akin to what inside linebacker was for the Jets at that time. I don't think that was the reason he failed in his transition. So even though these positions are kind of nominally the same, in certain systems, an outside linebacker role can vary wildly from what it is in another system. So that's another thing I think you have to consider. It's not simple, but there's a reason teams do it. And they're, you know, typically they just don't think the player can handle that role, or maybe it's a different role altogether. Maybe the name's kind of a misnomer. There are plenty of different explanations for it. So I don't think it's something you can rule out, but it's obviously not simple. And obviously, anytime you're changing something a player does, there is a challenge and there is a learning curve. Karma Credit has always been there to help you make better financial decisions, and now they want to help even more. With a Credit Karma Money Spend account, you can be rewarded for good money habits. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. When you use your Credit Karma Money debit card, you can win daily Instant Karma purchase reimbursements on items up to $5,000. Just pay with your credit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot, and your Instant Karma cash will be added to your spend account. Credit Karma Money has already given away over $3 million in instant karma to over 50,000 Credit Karma members and counting. Open your FDIC-insured spend account for free. There's no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and free withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. Credit Karma Money. Progress starts here. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning instant karma. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MVB Bank Incorporated, member FDIC. Maximum balance and transfer limits apply. This is the Locked On Jets podcast here on this Wednesday. Our next question: when in a rebuild, does it make more sense to prioritize either one of the offense or defense, or to try a more balanced approach? Would you rather have a strong offense or defense or competent but not special units? It's always tough to say. It depends on the circumstances. You know, again, I don't think that there's a universal answer. Now, I'm going to give you an answer that's specific to the New York Jets, and I'll admit I may be biased by what I've seen over the last decade, but I think the offense has to be the focus, and I think it's kind of been the focus, at least it was in the NFL draft, and that's because you're trying to develop a new quarterback, and we saw what happened over the last decade, but especially over the last 3 years when there was minimal attempt to build a competent offensive infrastructure around a young quarterback. So, you know, in general, is it better to do things one way or another? You know, I don't know. But for the New York Jets right now, trying to build around Zach Wilson, I want the focus to be on the offensive side of the ball. Now, that does not mean you pass up opportunities to add quality players on defense. But, you know, if I look at what the Jets did this offseason, and this is something I said heading into the free agency, the Jets were not going to be able to fix everything. You hoped that they would be able to fix some of their key areas of need, and they did. Something was going to have to be neglected, though, and that something was the corner position. And to be honest with you, better corner than receiver, better corner than offensive line, because after what we just went through with Sam Darnold, I did not want the offensive side of the ball neglected. Now, it did seem like, and I don't know whether this was a conscious strategy, but it seemed like the Jets kind of focused on the defensive side of the ball in free agency, and then really focused on the offensive side of the ball in the draft, making their first four picks offensive players. Now, whether that was by plan, I don't know, but I'm glad that there was a real focus on the offensive side of the ball in the draft. And in fact, I remember the first show after the draft, I made this comment that there are essentially, if you really break it down to broad terms, there are four types of players on offense. There's the quarterback, there's the guy who rushes the ball, there's a guy who catches the ball, and there's a blocker. Jets got all four of them in the first four rounds of the NFL draft, and I'm happy with that because in addition to Zach Wilson, having a guy who can block for him in Vera Tucker, having a guy who can catch the ball in Elijah Moore, and a guy who could run the ball in Michael Carter, those are players who are going to help Zach Wilson. You know, you have to give the young quarterback a fighting chance. So, you know, in general, is there a right way to build it? No. For the Jets, I think the absolute right way is to focus on the offensive side of the football. Our next question, why did Pete Carroll fail in two of his earliest stints as head coach? As a coach with a similar personality and scheme, how can Saleh be successful in his first stint? Now, caveat here, I was a kid when Pete Carroll was the coach of the Jets and then the Patriots. And second caveat, I went in biased because literally the first thing my first memory watching football was with my dad. And this was a point when Bruce Coslett was the Jets head coach and Pete Carroll was the defensive coordinator. My first memory is my dad saying, "That's Pete Carroll, the defensive coordinator. He's a jerk." Because there was this famous game against Miami where Carroll did something, was taunting the Miami kicker, and it came back to bite the Jets, and my dad did not like that. You know, looking back on it, Carroll probably, you know, this is, again, caveat, I was young, but I've also, like, looked back on this after Carroll had success at USC and in college, so I have examined this a bit. I kind of feel like he was just too young, too immature to get the job. I think that was one of the things when he was hired as Jets head coach. I mean, that team collapsed under him. Everybody remembers the Marino fake spike game. People forget. I mean, the Jets did not win another. That was a game where the Jets had a chance to put themselves in position to win the AFC East and make the playoffs. They blew a 24-6 lead to Miami. It was capped by the Marino fake spike where Aaron Glenn gets beaten for a game-losing touchdown. The Jets did not win a game the rest of that season. That team totally collapsed under Carroll. I mean, I've heard stories about he was playing basketball with the players. I've heard stories in New England about just a lack of discipline. And I think, like, he kind of found a better balance. You know, he's still the same. In some ways, he's still the same guy where he's really a player's coach, but I think he's found a little bit more balance how to command respect. I mean, that's kind of my read on the situation. Now, another thing I've read with Carroll is that he learned that he always wanted to be in control. Not so much with the Jets, but when he went to New England, they made a lot of bad decisions with the salary cap that put them in a tough spot. And he learned that, you know, he wanted to be in control because there were some moves that he says he disagreed with that put them in that bad spot. So he went to USC, and when you're in college, the coach runs everything. And then when he got the Seattle job, even though John Schneider was the general manager, Pete Carroll had ended up having final say over personnel decisions. So I think, you know, one of the things that he learned what he wanted from based on some of his early failures. He learned he kind of went to school on things. He learned why things did not work out so well. And I would say I think Salah is a little bit different because I think Salah kind of understands what he wants. I think Salah, maybe I'm just buying into the fan hype because I'm a fan. You know, maybe I'm getting too excited, but just from like listening to him speak, it sounds like he's really thought this through for years, what things would be like if he ever got a head coaching job, what he would want to do, how he'd run the team, the type of coordinators, the type of system he'd want to run. So from that standpoint, you know, I'm hoping that I'm right on that. We won't know until Salah actually takes the field. But I think the biggest difference is that Pete Carroll, you know, was kind of learning how to be a head coach on the fly. He wasn't really sure what he wanted to do in those early days with the Jets and the Patriots. Whereas I get the impression, you know, hopefully I'm right, that Salah really understands what he wants out of his football team, the team he's going to run. Our next question. I know it's a lot of ifs to happen, but none of them seem too out of hand to hope for. If Quinnen Williams and Carl Lawson can be strong complements and the various other defensive linemen can provide a strong rotation, if Mosley comes back close to what he was and Jared Davis and one of these young guys can be solid starters, if May has another strong season in a contract year and Ashton Davis and Bryce Hall can take the next step, isn't there a chance this team is just one corner away from having a top 10-5 defense? The offensive line gels and we win some early games. Could we be buyers at the trade deadline if a solid corner prospect becomes available? I think that's, you know, I don't think any of that's unreasonable, to be honest with you. You know, as you said, there are lots of ifs. And the thing is, you want sure things. You want guys you're confident in. You don't want a ton of ifs, but it's possible. I mean, none of those things is outrageous. Now, the thing about that is, if one of those things seems pretty likely to happen, are all of them going to happen? You know, maybe not, but you know, this is the thing, is like for the first time in a while, I feel like we're going to be entering the season in the position most NFL teams are, where there's a realistic path to success in a way where, you know, you don't need to like, you need to thread the needle a little bit, but you don't need like a miracle the way the Jets have needed the last couple of years, where there is a clear pathway here. And yeah, as you said, I mean, if Bryce Hall, I'd even go as far as to say, if Bryce Hall is a guy who lives up to his potential, I think the Jets could be one corner away from having a really special defensive unit here, because I think the other stuff, you know, I think the defensive line looks like a strong rotation. You know, is it the best group of pass rushers in the NFL? No, but it's credible. You know, as you said, Mosley, if he can come back and be a quality player, even if he's not the guy he was in Baltimore, if he could get close to that. So I don't think any of that's unreasonable. I think that does it mean it's going to play out that way? No, but I think if you're a Jets fan, I mean, you could certainly, I don't think you're out of line for hoping something like that. And I think it's very plausible.
Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. These may be protein bars, but they taste like candy bars. They're delicious. They're covered in chocolate. They're soft. They're easy to chew. And they're healthy. Most flavors have 17 grams of protein, 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and only 4 grams of net carbs. If you go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15, you'll get 15% off your first order. Again, that's promo code LOCKED15. It's one word with no space. LOCKED, number one, number five. For 15% off at BuiltBar, BuiltBar.com.
This is the Locked On Jets podcast here on this Mailbag Wednesday show. Our next question, J.O.K. fell in the 2021 NFL draft. Since we needed linebackers badly, and he's a great one, why did we not make a trade using next year's second from Carolina and another pick, maybe even their fourth? Well, I don't think the Jets liked J.O.K. as much, and J.O.K. was the linebacker prospect out of Notre Dame. I don't get the feeling the Jets liked him as much as a lot of draft analysts did, and since, as you mentioned, he fell. I mean, I think the answer is that simple. It doesn't make the Jets right or wrong. We'll find out. It doesn't make you right or wrong for wanting to trade up for him. I just don't think the Jets and a lot of teams in the NFL were as high on him as a lot of analysts were. And again, we'll find out who was right. But I also think that the Jets were probably cautious against trading 2022 draft picks because this is supposed to be a very deep draft class coming up. You know, this year this year was a pretty thin draft class, because the NCAA granted an extra year of eligibility for players, and a lot of guys did not enter the draft. But that means that next year, you're going to have a lot of guys entering the draft. You're going to have a very deep draft class. So I think the Jets were probably pretty hesitant to trade picks for future picks. Our next question. Which under-the-radar signings on offense and defense will make the biggest impact for the Jets this year? Well, I don't know if this counts as under-the-radar, but I've been on record how much I loved the Sheldon Rankins signing. I think that this is going to be, this could be a move that people look back on as a steal after the season. And I say could be because I don't know. I mean, I've certainly hyped up some signings in the past that have not panned out. But that's one that I really liked. You know, if you're talking about the offensive side of the ball, I think Keelan Cole, under the radar guy, and look, I'm not expecting him to be a great player, but I think people are maybe selling him a little short. I think he's a quality depth player. If he's your like your fourth or fifth option in your passing game, there are going to be weeks where maybe you can take advantage of that. He'll step in if, you know, somebody needs a week off because of an injury or something like that. I'm going to throw out a third guy. I know you asked for offense or defense, but how about special teams? Justin Hardy. Guy who's a special teams ace. The Jets signed him. It's kind of an unusual move to sign a special teamer in the early stages of free agency. It's kind of unusual to give him the kind of, now I'm not going to make it out like Justin Hardy's being paid like a, you know, starting wide receiver, but he got more money than your typical special teamer. But I think he can help a lot. And I think sometimes we ignore special teams at our own detriment. We don't appreciate how much value a good special teamer can come, but there are lots of special team snaps in each game. And a guy who can help on a number of different units can end up making kind of an under-the-radar difference through the rest of the season. So those would be the guys I'd choose as the under-the-radar moves that could help this team out this year. Anyway, that's all for our show today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy our show, subscribe to it and leave it a good review. Have a great Wednesday, everybody. We're going to be back tomorrow. We will have a Thursday show this week, so we'll talk then.